I want you to look at a picture. This picture is by David Wright. He does a lot of wilderness pictures as an artist. You know, God can use art in our lives. What do you see in this picture? Let's just think it through, and because there is a caption underneath, but we'll hold off on that. That David had here in mind when he painted this picture. And he actually goes out in the wilderness and thinks through different things, and just to get the feel of what he's trying to paint. This is a trapper. And prior to this experience, if we were just to think through maybe his day already, maybe he's already woken up, obviously, and he had his coffee over the fire, and he had his breakfast just like he always does every day. And the sun came up, and he's got his stuff together, and pack mule, and he's making his way, and as he's walking through the wilderness, he's probably thinking about, hey, man, I wonder what I caught today. So he's thinking about his traps, because that's what trappers do. They trap things, they catch them, and they want to get their furs, and that's how they're making a living. And they're usually by themselves, living by themselves, and can be a difficult life. But it's just maybe like any other day for this trapper. And he comes by a little stream, and it's still just a beautiful day. The sun may be up 9, 10 o'clock in the morning now. I can hear the birds. And he's just walking along his way, thinking about what he might have caught that day. And all of a sudden, out of the bushes comes that. And does he look happy to you? The caption underneath this painting is "Caught Off Guard." There you go. That's what you don't want to happen to you in your Christian life. Now, and you can just keep that picture up there. We don't have anything else on there. We'll just keep that up for them to look at that. I was watching an old movie this week. You guys know I like old movies, so I was watching Jimmy Stewart. And I love Jimmy Stewart. You know, it's hard to go wrong with Jimmy. And he was married to the same woman his whole life, and he ended up being a brigadier general in the Air Force in the reserves. He actually was a pilot and fought in World War II. So he wasn't just an actor. He was a very brave guy, courageous guy, fought for our country. And I'm not saying Jimmy was perfect, but I enjoy watching him, you know, and his expressions and everything. So he's in this particular movie, and he goes to this town with the guys that are working for him. He's a freighter, so he's got three wagons full of hardware stuff and tack that he delivers to this lady that owns a hardware store. So he delivers all that to her, and he says, hey, you know, we got to go back, and I just hate to go back with three empty wagons. Could you tell me where I could maybe pick up some freight so I can make a little money on my way back? And she's a prominent lady in the town. And so she said, well, you know, there's a salt mine outside of town. And really, people just go and pick up all the salt they want out there. It's just kind of for the picking. And if you'd like to go out there, I'm sure it'll be fine. Just go out there and just harvest you some salt and fill up your wagons and going back. He said, oh gosh, I appreciate that. That'd be great. So they go on out there, and they're filling up their wagons, shoveling the salt in the wagons. And then all of a sudden come these like 20 horses with these guys riding them, and boy, they're coming as fast as they can, and you just sense trouble's on the way. And sure enough, they show up, and Jimmy, he's just still shoveling his salt, you know, thinking, hey, this, everything is kosher here. Put him in his wagons. And the leader of the guy is the son of the man who owns all this property. And so he says, what do you think you're doing? Speaking to Jimmy. And Jimmy said, well, you know, such and such, the lady owns a hardware store. She told us we could come out here, that everybody could come out here and get the salt that they'd like or they need, and it was fine. And she told us we could. Is there a problem? Yeah, there's a problem. My dad owns all this property. And Jimmy said, well, hey, we'll be glad to pay for all this salt. Well, this guy didn't want to be confused with the facts. And he immediately had ordered all his guys to take Jimmy's wagons, those three wagons, and turn them over, and then he burned them all. And then he shot all his mules. And then he took a rope, had one of his guys take a rope around Jimmy and pulled him on the ground from his horse and right over a fire, for about 15 or 20 feet by the time they finally let Jimmy get up. Now, the reason I'm telling you that story is because that's kind of what led to this message today. I noticed something. I was sitting there watching all this. And as all this was going on, this heat started rising up within me. And it went all the way to my brain. And I thought, if I was there, right there in that situation, right there next to Jimmy, I'd have gone over there, I'd have grabbed that guy off his horse, and I would have beat his head in. I would have beat the living tar out of him. I wouldn't have cared what the rest of the other guy, I would have been so mad, I wouldn't have cared what the rest of the other 19 guys would have done to me because of the injustice that was occurring. And I thought, well, you know, I don't know if that's really good. I don't know. You know, and then I thought, and I'm talking about between a civil and a personal relationship. So I'm not talking about an unjust war situation, but Jimmy wasn't hurt. I mean, they carried him a little bit, but he dusted himself off. He said, the mules are gone, wagons, all that's gone. But, you know, you can replace all that. But I'm thinking to myself, you know, I said, Lord, you may have a little more work you need to do on me. Because here I'm ready to just tear this guy up. That's not good. In fact, Jesus said this. If somebody slaps you in the cheek on the right, what should you do? And now he's not talking about a situation where this person's trying to hurt you. This person's trying to insult you. And so you turn the cheek. If somebody asks you to a mile, go too. Somebody wants your shirt, give them your coat. And your coat, by the way, is what you used to sleep with when you were traveling. And now you're going to give him that. And in other words, Jesus was being more demanding than the people who were making the demands. I'm like, man, Lord, you've got some work to do in my life. He's probably got some work to do in your life too. Why? Because we don't want to be caught off guard. We want to be ready for whatever the Lord orchestrates, whatever the Lord orders for your life. So how do we do that, Mike? Well, we have chosen, many of us have chosen already, some disciplines in our life to help us in this area. And the reason we've chosen these disciplines is so that it will help us when there are disciplines imposed upon us that are involuntary. This grizzly bear is an involuntary discipline. And these things happen to us. They happen to us in family sometimes. I remember talking with a person a while back about another family member that had done a bad thing to another family member, and this family member was having a difficult time forgiving that person. See, that's a discipline that is involuntary, that's imposed upon her. She didn't do anything, but this other family member did it, and now she's got to deal with it, and she's having trouble. She was caught off guard. And boy, things happen. But God knows exactly what we need. He knows exactly how to orchestrate our lives. I met a man that is 65 years old. talk about a discipline that's been imposed upon you. And he just got custody of his three grandchildren. The oldest is 12 and the youngest is 16 months old. He's 65. You know how old that is. But God knows exactly what we... And by the way, I thought I was doing good. I'm walking 4 miles a day. Right? Why? Because I don't want to be caught off guard. Right? So I'm trying to work my heart. I'm trying to, you know, get the blood pressure going up. Man, my heart rate, you know, about to kill myself so I won't die. And I'm thinking I'm doing good walking 4 miles a day. This guy's 65. He just told me yesterday he walks 10 miles every other day in 2 hours. I said, just go away. Things happen. Sometimes our health fails. Not all of us live till we're 90 years of age. Things happen. I have chosen certain things in my life to... I'm choosing some disciplines in my life because I don't want to be caught off guard. I don't want this feeling, this thought, this mindset that I had when I'm watching this movie. So I'm working. I'm trying to prepare for the future. Now, I'm not asking God for trouble. I'm not asking that he'll bring me to so people can mock me and want my shirt and slap. I'm not, God, you don't have to pray for any of that stuff. The Lord knows how to bring you exactly what you need without your prayers. But I'm trying to prepare for it. So there are certain things that I'm doing. I was reading about the Benedictines. It's amazing. Those guys sing through 150 psalms, all 150 psalms, that's all there is, every single week. It's amazing. The Coptics, when we went down there, Drew and Chuck and I, they get up at 3 a.m. every morning to have their 4:30 in the morning service for 2 hours, 7 days a week. That one guy that's our host said he hadn't missed one in 7 years. Wow. That's another universe. And certainly there are people who really just go all out. But, you know, to be prepared for what God orchestrates in our life, there's some simple things we can do, some practical things that we can do, some things that are doable in order to not be caught off guard. I was reading about Sister Catherine. She's 85 years old. She's a nun. And they were going to have a retreat at another location. So all the nuns went except Sister Catherine. She just didn't feel like going. So everybody left. So she went down the elevator from her room to the kitchen to get her a little bit of food and some water to take it back up to her room. She was going to have lunch up there in her room. So she leaves the kitchen. She gets in the elevator. She hits the button and it goes up. And then right between floor one and floor two, it stops. And everybody's gone. And her cell phone won't work in the elevator. Y'all ever tried that? It really doesn't work in elevators. And so she thinks, well, I guess I'll eat my lunch. And she ate her lunch, and then she drank her water, and she said, well, now what do I do? Because nobody's coming back for 3 days. And she said to herself, well, you know, maybe the Lord designed all of this because he wants me to spend some alone time with him. And so for the next 3 days, Sister Catherine just prayed. Well, I'm just here to tell you that she didn't have that attitude just spontaneously, off the cuff. She had been preparing to not be caught off guard. Let me give you another example. Acts chapter 5. Remember that story? The disciples, all of them, the apostles, were out there preaching the gospel. And the religious leaders don't like it. They're angry. And so they have them all arrested and put in jail. The only problem is that night an angel comes and breaks them all out of jail and says, go back to the temple and do exactly what you were doing. So they went back in the temple and they were preaching the gospel again that next morning. And so the religious leaders got together for their meeting, decide what they were going to do with the apostles in jail. Only they weren't in jail. They were down there at the temple. And so the guard went to go find them, and they said the gate was locked and shut. The guards were standing there. Then they looked inside, and there wasn't nobody there. So they went back, and they told everybody. And they heard that they were down in the temple preaching the gospel. And so the guards went and said, because they were afraid of the people at this point and afraid of what has been happening, because obviously they got out. It was a miracle. And so the guards said, would y'all please come with us this time? And so they came with them. They went back to the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the priests, and there, here's what the Bible says in Acts chapter 5. Verse 27, and when they had brought them, they set them before the council, and the high priest asked them, saying, did we not strictly command you not to teach in this name? Now, what should have been his first question? How in the world did you get out of jail, man? But they don't want to be confused with the facts. They're not interested in that. And so they go on and they chide them and they say, we told you not to do this. And they got so mad, they wanted to kill them right there on the spot. These people, they mean business. And the apostles knew that. And so Peter says, I'm sorry, we're going to have to obey God. We can't obey you. And they wanted to kill him, but Gamaliel says, no, let's don't do that. Look, if it's of God, you don't want to be fighting against God. And if it's not, it'll just go by the wayside anyway. And so here's what they did to him. They didn't just let him go. Verse 40. And they agreed with Gamaliel. And when they had called for the apostles and beaten them, they commanded that they should not speak in the name of Jesus. And they let them go. Now, we just run right through that verse. They beat them. We think, oh, they just, you know, struck him on the mouth. No. Now, a Jewish beating is not a Roman beating. A Roman beating is really bad. You usually don't live through those because they have all the pieces of bone and metal and other things at the end of the whip. And like, that's what Jesus had to do. A Jewish beating has the leather, but it doesn't have any of the stuff on the end of it. But what they do is they give you 40 lashes. And so they'll strip your shirt. So they did this to each one of the disciples. And they give you 1/3 of the 40 on the front side. And you get the 2/3 of the 40 on the back side. And you're on your knees while they do this. And I looked it up because in the Mishnah, the Mishnah says, as they're beating them, someone reads from Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 58 through 63, quote, if you do not carefully follow all the words of this law, and he'll just continue to read the whole, all the verses, and then just repeatedly keep saying it the whole time while they're being beaten. Now, so these guys, they didn't just let them off. This was terrible. This was a bad deal. These guys, they probably had to carry them out. And what was their response? Were they caught off guard? Here's what the Bible says. So they departed, verse 41, from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. Now that's what you're looking for right there. That's what you want to prepare for. Now, nobody's going to beat us, you know. We're not going to get that deal. Most of our beatings are emotional, aren't they? I mean, really, where we live in America. But this is where you want to go. You want to go when you get beat up emotionally, or it might be your health. that you get beat up. It might be your family. It might be something that happens with your kids or with your parents at home, in the neighborhood, at church, at work. You get beat up. This is what you want to prepare for. You want to be able to rejoice. And then it goes on. Here's something else. Verse 42. And daily in the temple and in every house, they did not cease teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ. They not only rejoiced, they kept on doing what they were supposed to be doing. They didn't stop. They chose to endure. They kept their faces like flint towards the will of God. Now, that's what you're looking for. More than that, that's what God's looking for in your life. This past week, Christian Hill, he graduated from Dallas Baptist University, and what's our anniversary? 082590. Now you know our password. There you go. So Christian Hill graduated, and he's now working at Prestonwood Baptist Church, which is up in Dallas. So he took a group of kids over to Scotland for a mission trip. Now, their mission trip was about, like, picking up garbage, painting picket fences, doing work for people that, you know, they couldn't do it for themselves, to help people, help their neighborhood. And then they also sang gospel songs at a mall and other places. So that's kind of what they did, all right? And they were handing out prayer cards, asking people if they had a prayer request, if they wanted them to pray for and stuff like that. Well, how'd their little trip go? Commentators in Scotland are aghast that a youth choir from a Christian church in America was allowed to perform at a shopping center in Edinburgh, comparing the young people from Texas to Nazis and ISIS. What message does it send when a shopping center welcomes this kind of musical Trojan horse into a Scottish city? Where should we draw the line? This is Shona Craven, a columnist for the Herald and the national newspapers in Scotland. A neo-Nazi puppet show at the Giles Shopping Center? Magic tricks by Islamic State at Buchanan Galleries? I'm sure most Scots are far too savvy to be taken in by evangelical showmanship, but that's not really the point. As a nation, we should be stating clearly, bigots are not welcome here, Craven wrote. The Scottish Secular Society, according to the Herald newspaper, issued an alert that Southern Baptist ministries in the U.S. were increasingly looking to use their money and influence to change laws in the U.K. The reason for that hatred, question mark? The youth's church follow biblical teaching on homosexuality, abortion, and other hot button issues. Guilty as charged. Now, how should we respond to that? Should we throw a fit? Should we just tell this lady she's out of her mind? She is out of her mind. I'll tell you what the kids did. You know what they did? As all this stuff was going on, they kept painting picket fences. They kept picking up trash. They kept singing the gospel and handing out prayer cards. And as they were doing it, one day an elderly man walked up to him, a physician. He said, "What are you people doing? Why did y'all come all the way across the pond to pick up our trash and paint our fences and sing your silly songs? Why are you here?" And there were three little teenage girls that were standing there in front of this man, and they said, "Sir, we're here to share the love of Jesus. That's why we've come. That's why we're doing what we're doing." And you know what he said? He said, "Well, whatever you got, that's what I want." And right there on the spot, That elderly physician prayed the sinner's prayer and asked Jesus Christ to come into his life. Isn't it amazing that even three teenage girls can be living their life, their disciplined life, in such a way that they weren't caught off guard? But they were ready to be used by God. Now, as we close, let me give you three little things that I'm doing in my life to help me, so I won't respond like I wanted to watching Jimmy Stewart. So I won't be, put our picture back up there, Linda, so I won't be caught off guard. First thing that I do in my prayers is I'm saying, Lord, I recognize that you order my life. You're the one that does it. There's no one else to go to. There's no one else to complain about, complain to. You order it. You orchestrate it. You're the conductor. You're the King of Kings. You're the Lord of Lords. Secondly, since you're the one that orders everything in my life, since you're the one that works Romans 8:28 in my life, I welcome it. You see, we can respond to these things in a couple negative ways. One way we can do is like the prodigal, we can rebel. Why did he take the money and take off? Why did he do that? He was going to get the money. At some point, the problem was his dad imposed a discipline upon him that was involuntary, that he didn't like, that he didn't welcome. You know what his dad was saying? Son, you're going to get the money, but I know the perfect timing for your life, and so you're not going to get it yet. You're not ready. His son didn't like that. He rebelled, and he ran away. No, you don't want to do that. Lord, you orchestrate my life. I'm going to welcome it. Remember the rich man that came to Jesus? How do I get to heaven? And Jesus knew his problem was coveting. He knew that was what was keeping him between from the Lord. And so he said, well, just give all your money to the poor, and then you can go. Oh, he couldn't do that, and he withdrew from the Lord. He walked away. So many people, the grizzly bear comes, the problem comes, the difficulty comes, the trial, the unwanted hurt or pain or emotional getting beaten up, and they get mad, they get angry, fight or flight, and they walk away from the Lord. Don't do that. No. Here's what I do to prepare, because I don't know what's coming. I don't know what I need, but God knows what I need. Lord, you orchestrate my life. And secondly, I welcome what you want to bring in my life. And thirdly, I choose to rejoice right now, always. Now, what does Philippians 4:4 say? Rejoice in the Lord sometimes. Rejoice in the Lord as long as mama's feeding you good. As long as everybody's being nice to you. As long as everything's working out. As long as everything is, the pegs are being fit just like you want them to be. No, that's not what it says. It says rejoice in the Lord always. Whether things are working out or things are not. That's why Job was such an incredible man. Blessed be the name of the Lord. The Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. These are the prayers. You need to practice now on a daily basis your confession. You need to discipline yourself now, each day. Impose upon yourself these disciplines so you'll be ready for those that are disciplined, that are imposed upon you, that are involuntary. Because they're coming. If you're alive long enough in this world, it's going to happen. And it's probably already happened. And for some of you, it's happening right now. Let's pray. Let's start that prayer right now. Lord, I know you order my life. And I want to say to you, Lord, whatever you want to do, even if it's bringing 3 grandchildren into my life at 65, even if you're allowing this health issue, even if you're allowing this problem in my family, even if this need that I have that I feel like needs to be met goes unmet, I know you are ordering my life and I welcome it. You know what's best for me, like the father in the story of the prodigal son. And you know what I need, and you know when I need it. And Lord, I choose to rejoice. I choose to endure. I choose to continue doing what you want me to do. I want to be like the apostles in Acts chapter 5, even when I get emotionally beat up. Help me, Lord, as I confess these things each day of my life and throughout my day, to not be caught off guard like that trapper with the grizzly bear.